This is wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm good. Do we have time for me to quickly change my settings, my audio settings?
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
Oh, man. You know, it's been like 3 years since all these things happened, but for some reason, still haven't learned.
Well, welcome to the Jazz Podcast. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you so much for making the time to come and talk to us, Ali. What a delight this will be. I haven't got my notes ready. Such a noob. Ali, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, for sure. So I am a saxophonist and film composer based out of Nova Scotia, Canada.
All right. We started our show. Thanks for that. You filled in beautifully. Like, my notes are ready. I just played a track for our lovely listeners, Interblaze, off of your album, Interblaze. I love the title, Ali Fiola and the Next Quest. So cool. How did you think this up? This first, tell us about the title, because that's a brilliant name of an album.
Yeah, so the Interblaze.
And I like, is the band called The Next, like, and The Next Quest?
Right. So that my band name that I go under is Ali Fiola and The Next Quest. To me, names have a lot of importance. I put a lot of thought and care into them because usually when you come up with a name, you're kind of stuck with it. So when I first started writing my own music and presenting it as a group, you know, sometime in the last 10 years, I can't exactly remember when, I came up with The Next Quest. Because I wanted the group to, I didn't want to be called, you know, the Ali Fiola Quintet, or it's just kind of a bit more boring. And maybe sometimes I don't want to play as a quintet.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great point. Yeah. Just leave it open.
Exactly. It allows you to play in any sort of size that you want.
So how many albums have you done with the band and The Next Quest?
So my first album, Dreaming Away, was just under my name, Ali Fiola. And then this is the first album that I put under The Next Quest.
Oh, amazing. But you're planning many.
I hope so.
Okay. Tell us about Nova Scotia. This is awesome. You're our first ever guest from Nova Scotia. We've had Canadians before, but never as remote as where you are. But also, to me, Nova Scotia is like a relief, because often when you like, if you fly over the Atlantic from like London or Manchester, it's like the first land you see in hours, you know, because of the way, I don't know, the curvature of the earth and stuff. So I've probably looked down on it, but I don't know nothing. Can you teach me what it's like there? How's life and how's the music scene there?
Definitely. Nova Scotia is, I mean, first of all, I recommend everyone come check out this place. It's a kind of a hidden gem in Canada. There is this thing called the East Coast vibe. Life is a bit slower here. People are friendlier. You know, you hear that, I guess it's kind of a stereotype that Canadians are friendlier, I guess. I don't know. But the East Coast is what really, I think, defines that aspect. If you want to come here and, you know, sorry, there's so many things to say about it. Like, if you're at a bus stop, you can learn about someone's whole life.
Yeah.
Yeah. People are super eager to talk and it's kind of a nice thing, but you need to slow down and have time for that conversation.
Yeah.
And then naturally, like, my gosh, we're surrounded by the ocean, you know, in any direction you go.
Yeah, you, that's amazing. What a delight.
I love it.
Yeah. Have you always lived there?
No, I actually, I come from a military family. So I was actually born in Alberta. And I lived up north in the Northwest Territories for a little bit. But I've been in Nova Scotia since 2000. So for most of my life, So I identify as a Nova Scotian.
Right. How long have you lived there? When did you move there? Sorry, I'm quiet because I'm like frantically Google Mapsing everything you're saying and then acting like a man of the world when I'm like, oh, of course, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, respect. no, I moved. I've been here since year 2000.
Right. Okay.
23 years.
23 years. That's wonderful. So Alberta, Canada. That, do you know, this sounds really silly, but what that reminds me of, nobody cares about this. Sorry, listeners. Nobody asked for this. Is if you ever used to watch like professional wrestling, like WWF, I'm sure there was a wrestler. It might have been Chris Benoit, who was from Alberta, Canada, because they would always say the state and the country. It's such an American thing to like have to like, you know, your state is such a big part of your identity. I guess because it's a big place. Canada's an even bigger place. Alberta's massive.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so sorry, you go ahead.
Well, I think you're right. I think in Canada too, like people really identify by the province that they're from.
Wow. Wow. I mean, like, you know, England's tiny. We're all like crammed in here. Tell me then, what's the military part of your history? Who's in the military in your family?
My dad.
Right.
Air Force. He was a flight engineer for like 42 years, just retired.
Wow.
And so my brother followed his footsteps and I did to an extent. I've been in the Army Reserve Band for just about 13 years.
That's amazing. You still doing that?
Yeah, it's kind of a fun little side gig. And that's, I really so cool. Like the people who are part of it.
Yeah. People is everything. That's why I feel like that's why at our stage with a musical instrument, if you're still going, it's probably the people you were playing with, you know. By this point, if there were nobody fun to play with, I think it would have lost its mystery a little bit. But that's brilliant. How often do you do that?
So that's every Monday night from, you know, like September to May. And we usually take a break during the summer.
How long are these rehearsals? What's it like? I have no idea. You tell me more things. A rehearsal, is it really strict? Is it quite relaxed? Is there a lot of people there? Do you have to wear a uniform? Is it like, you know, tell us everything, the basics, because I know nothing.
Yeah, these are great questions. So I guess, first of all, to join the band, like we all have to go through basic training. So that is something that I did.
Cool. Tell us about basic training.
In the reserves, it's a lot more chill. It's like, you know, maybe a month. If you go full-time military, it's like 3 months.
Right.
But it's like kind of what you imagine what basic training would be.
Right. So Well, then what I imagine it to be is where you like you have to do like a 10K, like 5 days a week, and you have to crawl under those barbed wire fences when they make it deliberately muddy. Then you have to climb over a fence that's just too tall, whilst easily you could have walked around the side, but no one's allowed to. And then you all go to the bar, get absolutely wasted. And then you do it again the next day, but all hungover. And then you develop a kind of camaraderie of like, you know, that you're all going through it together. And then you've qualified from basic training.
Yeah, basically. Well, sort of. Definitely about the camaraderie and the hangovers.
Yeah, okay. That's good.
But maybe not quite so physically demanding.
Right. I know this might be a silly question, but I mean it genuinely. In basic training, is there lots of actual like target practice and using weapons and, you know, that kind of like, okay.
That's right. Yeah. So we get qualified on the C7 semi-automatic rifle.
Wow, that's so intense.
Yeah, it's, as a musician, I'm not a big fan of shooting, but you know,
I would always, you know, like in the movies when they have like a cheesy one-liner, and I'd like to imagine myself with my rifle firing one shot a minute, and then when everyone else goes quiet, say something really dumb like, just like my Selma back home, you know, and you know, we're good with fingers. We're dexterous. This is our life skill. Saxophone totally. Players. That's that must help. That must help with a gun. I'm convinced.
Yeah, not sure if I can comment on that, but
all right,
why not?
Oh, Ali, this is incredible. I can't believe you're in the military reserves, qualified with a rifle, and yet you're willing to talk to me about jazz as well.
Well, jazz and film music, those are what I consider my real life. It's what I kind of prefer to do day to day.
Right. So tell us about the film music. This is a very interesting element to your music making that I'm very curious about.
Yeah, I guess, you know, ever since I was young, like, I've been really into storytelling. And that's come out in like different ways. Like, it used to be elaborating on dreams that I had, or, you know, writing poetry. And then it kind of turned into music when I started playing the saxophone and improvising. And then the film music part of it is literally storytelling, because you're accompanying the visuals on screen. And sometimes you do have to take the story in a different way. And so when I do write music, because I write a lot of original jazz music as well, I always have a concept in mind, or like some sort of story framework.
Right. So much to talk about, and my brain's crashing as a result. Let's go real slow. The films that do you like look for filmmakers? Do they find you? How many films have you scored, or just bits of films? Tell us about how this whole thing works.
Yeah. So it's all about relationships and networking in the film industry. Very similar to, you know, being a jazz musician, but just a little bit more intense, I think, because it's a pretty saturated market at the moment. So I've scored about 12 short films.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. And at the beginning, it was a lot of trying to seek out those relationships. But now that I've kind of planted those seeds, some of those producers and directors are starting to come to me now, which is kind of what you hope to achieve.
Yeah. So when you orchestrate a short film, do you perform as well, or do you use different orchestrations depending on the film?
I always love to try to mix live instruments with software libraries, because I haven't had, you know, big enough budgets to hire large ensembles. So I often do play on the scores, either, you know, flute, saxophone, or different percussion experimental techniques.
By booking yourself as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Because on these shorter projects, it's a one-person team. So you kind of have to make that budget work.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully then by the end, it will be like, you'll never have to ask anyone for, you know, people will just be coming to you. One of my old teachers was like that. He used to just not answer the phone if he wasn't in the mood. And he had, you know, he had so much work that it didn't even matter to him anymore. It's like, that's how I want to live my life, you know.
That is the dream.
That's the one. So... do you ever have an agent for that kind of thing with a film, or do you do everything yourself, like looking for the work and then creating the scores and everything?
At the moment, it's all me doing the work. When agents come in is kind of funny, because you never seek out an agent, they seek out you. So if you've finally made it to a point where you are creating something great, you know, you've scored something that's on Netflix or somewhere else, and you catch their eye, then they see you as someone that's worth being on their roster.
Right.
And then you can work together to get more work.
So that's a good thing if that happens.
Yeah, I'd say so. You know, it's not always, I think it depends on the agency. You want to make sure, it's about relationships. So you want to make sure that it's a good, healthy working relationship.
Right. And then with the jazz side, do these two mix together or are they like mutually exclusive, you know, having to like, do you promote yourself differently for films and for jazz or is it like, is there lots of crossover between them?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think, so I guess the first part of that is, I think that they do connect together. In this, you know, the way that I write, first of all, but then also the way that I think about jazz and film music. For a long time, performing saxophone and playing jazz really gave me a lot of anxiety. I think just because of the nature of it, you know, trying to find the right people to play with, you know, just performing for people in general. But then when I started writing film music, and that was just, you know, in the last 6 years, composing was something exciting and new, and I didn't have any hangups about it. I didn't have any anxiety. It was just fun. And it reminded me of when I first started playing the saxophone. And so eventually I was able to, and I'm still working on it, but bridge that gap of, this is music. This is something I enjoy. It's fun.
So do you feel like you have an alter ego when you're writing for a film? Like how I feel if I'm playing the clarinet, I'm like, ooh, it's like somebody else. I've got no finger memories, but sort of know how the instrument works.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I don't think so. I think no matter what, good or bad, I'm only able to be myself.
Mm-hmm. But that's really important. My wife, Claire, and I were talking about this today, about how being yourself actually adds a like authenticity and an honesty to your music that is a really good thing.
Yeah, I think that's something that I do try to strive for.
Your music's really punchy and exciting. Certainly this album that we started out with. Tell us about how you write for your band. Tell you what I'd also love to talk about is your, how did it come to be that Jeff Coffin was like the special guest on the album? Because he's playing tenor. He's got some solos and some fun things to do in there. Like, did you write the album first and then he get involved, or did you always know that Jeff was going to play on it?
This is a pretty cool turn of events. I have to say, yeah, first of all, Jeff is he's amazing. Really great musician and guy to work with. It kind of goes to show that it never hurts to ask or put yourself out there. Originally, I got put into contact with Jeff through a mutual friend. Because I was going to apply for a study grant through Canada Council.
Right.
And that didn't happen. Oh, sorry.
No, what's a study grant? And what point in your development is this? Because I don't know about these.
Oh, yeah, no worries. So
we have no grants for anything anymore here. Oh. No, we do, but not enough money. You know, everything's a struggle.
That's too bad. Yeah, Canada does have some pretty decent grants. We're very lucky here. But this was, you know, about 2019 when I had just started writing my first couple of tunes for the album, when I was really trying to hone in on what it was that I liked writing and playing.
Right. Okay.
And so I was going to apply to study with Jeff for, you know, a few weeks, kind of with in mind this album. Because he has a lot of producing and recording experience as well. And so that, as grants go, you never know if it's going to go through or not. This one didn't go through. And at that time, I was actually doing my master's in England, in London.
Where did you study?
Well, I studied at a school called Kingston University.
Wow, that's amazing. I teach a girl whose dad works there. We're always talking about the music department and what's going on and who's there. This is amazing. What a small world.
Yeah. Really nice campus.
Yeah, what we used to, it's Kingston is lovely. It's like Southwest London. That's where I lived there for years, but I've escaped. That's so weird. I probably drove past you like 50,000 times while you were here to teach there every week. Oh, that's scary. Okay, so in Kingston, you're at the uni. What specifically was your course?
So I was studying a master's in film composing.
Right, okay. Yeah. Okay. Was it fun? Did you like it?
It was fun. It was nice because it gave me a lot of space to study and also do my own projects.
Right.
So that was, you know, taking on film scoring projects, but also starting writing for this album. So it's just a really great, like, creative time and space.
Yeah. And how did you come to know that Kingston, England was the place to be for this?
So I knew that I wanted to get out of Canada and experience a new industry. Because as we mentioned at the beginning, I live in Nova Scotia and I love living here and I don't plan on moving, but I do know that the opportunities can be limited. So I was looking at either the United States or somewhere else abroad. And I had quite a few friends who really had a lot of great things to say about England. And so I applied for a few schools, and it's kind of a toss-up because I got accepted to the University of Edinburgh as well. But I decided that I really wanted to experience London.
I think given where you live, being not as crowded as London, it kind of gives you the complete opposite experience in every way, doesn't it? To just live in a really big city for a while and get a feeling of, and also I think in London the standards of everything is so high. The education there's great. There's so many universities, there's so many good schools. It's crazy to work there. Like for me as a teacher, working there is something else, you know, because everyone, even like with how many music colleges we've got turning out great musicians, you find like people like tend to like, I have a lot of years of studying the saxophone, and like the best jobs I had there were like lovely prep schools. So kids are like having like quite good teachers, let's say, from a young age, if you don't mind me saying, you know, and then they like go on to secondary school without bad habits. So they get really good, really quick. And the cycle kind of continues because then they get better than you and then they start teaching. And then, you know, a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you like. What was your impression of London and the scene and the standard then?
I loved it. And I took a lot of inspiration from it in my album Interblaze. You know, I had never seen the underground system before, like going down two flights of escalator into the ground was amazing. The music scene, you know, being able to go to the Royal Albert Hall and see David Arnold and Michael Giacchino in person and having their music be played by the orchestra.
That's amazing. He scored like Star Trek, didn't he? Michael Giacchino in Rogue One, I think he might have done. Was that one? No, I've made that up. Hang on, get back on the old Google. But yeah, he's awesome. he did all the best Star Trek films, the J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, that's right. And quite a few like Pixar films.
I was going to say, you actually know these things. Why am I talking? You're listening to me guess which films he's done. That must be infuriating.
Oh, no, it's all good.
Tell us what that concert was like and how does that experience kind of inspire you when you're composing?
It was kind of unlike anything I'd experienced before. I had a seat in the choir. So I was sitting.
Oh, you're like behind.
Yeah. So I could read the music off of like the trombone players. And
wow. Was that a deliberate choice to sit behind them to kind of like, you know, get your binoculars out and see what's going on down there?
That's
in trombone
right.
Three. Wow. Brilliant.
Yeah.
How brilliant.
And I just kind of thought to myself, I'm a big dreamer. And I thought, man, maybe one day this will be me.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it should and will be.
Oh, thank you.
But, you know.
I hope.
Yeah. Well, there's no other way. No one else is going to get you there. You know, you got to have these dreams for yourself and push yourself to achieve them.
That's right.
It's a hard, I'm quite an extreme person. I flex between like, I'm going to do this no matter what. So then some days I'm like, oh, what was I thinking? I just want to like, just relax. And like, sometimes like our jobs are weird. Because there's no like switching off. You know what we do for a living and the way we like identify as musicians is so tangled up in our personality. There's no off switch.
And it's hard to balance and to not like take things too seriously or be hard on yourself.
Mm. Yeah, I'm hardest on myself with my sax playing. There's certain things that I can't do that I should be able to do by now. And when my saxophone doesn't behave itself, I'm like, ah, you know, when I was younger, it was fine. But now I'm 35 years old and I'm like, come on, come on. Such an annoying instrument because it's actually really hard.
I know. Yeah, it is.
What drew you to play the sax? How did you get into it to begin with?
So it's kind of a mystery because none of my family is musical. I'm the only one who started. And so the only thing that I can think of is Lisa Simpson.
Wow. Yeah. That's a wonderful reason why. Cause I actually play those. There's a couple out like episodes with Bleeding Gums Murphy.
Yeah.
Like playing alto sax and Lisa playing baritone and they play a few blueses together and it's just crazy how good it is. It's one of the things I love about the Simpsons. Like they're original 10 years, they don't half-ass anything. You know, if it's like, we're going to have saxophone, let's get the best damn sax players we could possibly find. You know, it's not like average, it's like awe-inspiring. I wonder how many people play the sax because of Lisa.
Yeah, it's a, yeah, you're right though, especially those first 10 seasons. Yeah.
Yeah. Really. Do you have a favorite episode? Because I was at a gig the other day and it just so happened this person I was chatting to and I can't remember how The Simpsons came up, but she said to me, you know what episode I love? And I sort of breathed in thinking, come on. And you know, it was like the same time, You Only Move Twice, the one with Hank Scorpio. He's like a villain. And they moved to Cypress Creek because Homer gets a new job because he's the third most senior man at the power plant, which must make him qualified after Smithers turns it down. Anyway, that episode blows my mind. Are there any that spring to mind for you that changed your life?
Maybe not life changing, but I think I really like the one where the story of how Lisa got her saxophone, I think is a really nice one.
Yeah. Is that after it gets flattened?
Yes.
That's so funny when the truck runs over it and it looks fine, but then it turns towards the camera and it's completely two-dimensional. That's really sad, though, that it breaks. It's awful. It's beautiful, though. There's a lot of like genuine heart and soul in those episodes. And stuff like that's a really good example of like just a really gorgeous episode about a child who wants to learn a musical instrument, you know, sort of at the heart of everything that we do.
That's right.
How much, sorry, that's not how I meant to phrase that question. It's my cat's walking over the mic. Can't be good. Can't be good. He's like appeared in 200 of the 220 episodes. But there's no, you know, there's no studio. So apologies for that. Sorry, listeners. Do you do any teaching as part of your week?
I do a little bit of teaching. I currently just have two students. One is just getting ready to finish up high school, and the other one is a beginner in her middle age. And I was a little bit apprehensive at first because I'm not always the most eloquent speaker or good at getting the thoughts out of my brain in a clear way. But I have really enjoyed teaching these two students in particular just because it reinforces things that I want to implement in my own life and practice.
That's a wonderful way to view it, because it does, doesn't it? I find myself saying things that I don't necessarily do, but I think I really should be doing that. Yeah. And I expect them to do it. So why am I, you know, like long notes? Might do some long notes. Long notes are good. But also, though, Ali, you might find that your idea of not getting words out like might really match someone else's idea of not, you know what I mean? Like it may be something that you think, like, I'm terrible with words. And yet, well, I mean, I do this podcast because I love it. But, you know, trying to like spit out a sentence is a real challenge. But I guess the fun of what we're doing is that there's an instrument there. So you kind of explain something a bit. But then when you're playing to each other, you know, maybe people learn in a completely different way anyway, if you're able to hear what you're aiming for.
Yeah, exactly. And I do find that I'm able to maybe speak a little better through my instrument.
Mm. Tell us a bit about the rest of the band for this album, for Interblaze, because we had a chat about it the other day whilst trying and failing to make this interview happen. Which I entirely blame on myself, because it was my fault and my idiot computer. But you mentioned your old teacher was playing tenor, baritone.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was on Barry.
Barry, Chris, okay. Mitchell. Okay.
Yeah. And and getting back to Jeff Coffin, because we got him on the project, because my partner, who plays sousaphone on the album, Addison Sowery Quinn.
Yeah.
We were talking about it, and he said, well, you know, why don't you just ask Jeff to record on the album? And I thought, no, that's ridiculous. Why would I do that? He'll say no. But then I did, very nervously, and Jeff was like, yeah, that sounds like fun. Let's make it happen.
Great.
And so he came out to Nova Scotia, and
wow.
And it turns out he has Nova Scotian roots in his family. So he made a whole trip out of it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Good for him as well. Like, it's so easy to record online. It sort of gives me a sense of great joy that he's like come all the way to you to do it, you know, and like,
that's amazing.
Be in the vibe. Who else? I don't want to miss anyone out. Who for else sure. is on the CD?
So we have CD, Glenn Pacha. So many old. That's, hey, no judgment.
It's a safe space. Tell us about Glenn. Who is Glenn?
Yeah, so Glenn Pacha is an amazing organist. He plays a bit of an accordion too on the album, but he tours and plays with Bonnie Raitt, who just won a Grammy, which is super cool.
Wow.
He lives in Nova Scotia now.
Place to be. That's amazing. Brilliant.
Yeah. And then on trombone, we have a local guy named Simon Oakey. He's fantastic. Andrew Miller on drums. Let me think here. On guitar, we have one of my old classmates from my master's program in London, Siobhan Caban. He, we were both living in the same flat at the time. And he was there for performance in guitar, but he's originally from Kurdistan, and he's got this sick rock sound, and I knew that I wanted it on the album. And so he's actually living in Ottawa now with his wife, doing a PhD.
Wow, cool. That's lucky. He'd be like, all right, you're in Canada. Fancy that.
I know. Yeah, and then I mentioned my partner Addison was on sousaphone.
Yes. So was that quite an easy choice then? Like, did you hear it like as a sousaphone playing bass lines?
Oh yeah. Especially this album is entirely inspired by the New Orleans brass band scene. You know,
it's
funk.
Wonderful how brassy it is.
Yeah. I love that sound, and like something that's a bit more accessible and fun to play and fun to listen to, I think.
Yeah, a lot of the American guests I have say that to me a lot on the shows, that like, you know, it's supposed to be fun, right? And audiences are supposed to want to listen to your music. And I'm always like, oh, no.
I mean, there's different types of audiences.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. Thank you for that, Ali. I appreciate that. We're going to finish this show with Backtrack because it has a mega sousaphone start. So if any listeners are still wondering what a sousaphone is, it's just a great big, it wraps all the way around you, doesn't it? Like around your torso.
Enormous. Tuba that you wear.
Tuba that you wear. Fashion statement it is. Well, you'll hear it right now. So Ali, thank you so much for coming on the Jazz Podcast. It's been wonderful to talk and to share stories with you and learn about your life. So this Interblaze, this was out this year, and it's I assume it's available everywhere.
It is. It great. Is worldwide.
Worldwide. There you go. If you like it, please consider buying a copy because streaming is great and it's very practical, but it's not really great for the artists. But either way, thank you all for listening. Thank you for checking it out and listening to the show. Here is Backtrack from Ali Fiola and The Next Quest. Wow, that was actually a really good ending. Normally my endings fizzle out horribly.
Thanks so much.